live, if you count anything you're listening to at the moment as live. It's the Mike Novak Show. Gardening, green living, and the environment. Just mix into a paste, smear it on your computer, add water, and you'll probably have to replace your keyboard. Oh well, let's all sing.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Hey there, hi there, ho there, and thank you for being with me, whether you're listening at MikeNovak.net or GDGDRadio.com or on TuneIn or someplace else. Who knows? Go ahead, stump the radio host. Today's show is almost a full hour with my gardening buddy Melinda Myers, who's a gardening expert, TV radio host, author and columnist, the 2013 recipient of the National American Horticultural Society's B.Y. Morrison Communication Award. She has a master's degree in horticulture, is a certified arborist, is currently on the board of directors for the International Society of Arboriculture, has over 30 years of horticulture experience, and has written more than 20 gardening books. Busy gal. And she has peeps, as you will hear. And she and I like to chat about all things gardening. So we had a really good time, and I hope you do too. Sit back, relax, and in just a couple of minutes, we start our conversation.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynock of Ninglador.
Captain, shields are failing.
Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
We now join the conversation with Melinda Myers, already in progress. And if you're wondering what that means, you'll figure it out in a couple of minutes. That is the thing I always fear, is that when I'm at the control board here, and more when it was live radio than it is now, but sometimes you'll be searching for something and you ask somebody a question and they do an answer, and you can hear them talking, but you're not paying attention.
Right.
And then you finish with what you're doing, and then you realize you haven't heard a word of what they just said. And and you're afraid to ask the next question because they might have just answered it.
And you can't really say, could you repeat that, please? Because I really kind of checked out there for a minute. But I'm sure it was very interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure. And maybe let's repeat it again, because some people don't get it on the first try.
That's good.
Oh, Lordy. But see, these are all the pitfalls of doing recorded stuff. And that's the other thing for people listening.
They hear it once and, yeah, did somebody just say something weird? But for me, when I'm editing tape or going over a podcast and hearing the same dumb thing I said over and over again, repeated, and to burn a hole in my brain, well, you either learn from it or you don't.
Yeah, true.
But you know that because you were in radio yourself.
Yeah. And there are days, even now, and you know, and no matter how long you do it, there are just days you're really on and days you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, glad that's over, because well, it was not the best.
That's true. And it's kind of the difference between doing radio, live radio, podcasting, which is not live. Sometimes, though, I grab my recording device, my MP3 player, and I go out on location and talk to people, and you want to do it on the fly. You want to make it sound good as it, and hope you don't have to do any edits. And then there's television, and that is a completely different animal.
Oh, yeah.
As you know, and that's because you just did a 12-disc DVD set, host Melinda Myers, and it's in the Great Courses series. I didn't know you had done that, Melinda.
Yeah, this is the fourth one, and it was really a lot of fun. The first two we did were in Washington, D.C., so everything was shot there. So I flew out, and we did one on containers and one on designing your best landscape, you know, tricks and ideas for small and large space. And so we met, and then I went out there for a week, and we, you know, went and planned the garden. And then a month later, I came out, and we went shopping and planted the garden. A month later, we went out, and we did some maintenance and touch-up. So every time I would fly back, I'm like, ooh, I hope the gardens are alive and looking okay. And so luckily for the next two, trees and shrubs and the edibles, I said, why don't you let me shoot here? I work with a professional crew. I have space now, and we can follow the garden, especially the garden, from start to finish. And so that was really a lot of fun. So we did lasagna gardening and raised beds and interplanting and soil prep. And, you know, I could follow from start to finish. So that was really a lot of fun. And, of course, it was when we – not this past winter, but the year before, it's 19 below, 3 feet of snow – May, we don't even have the garden laid out, let alone the soil tilled. So
mm-hmm.
I called it crisis gardening. Okay, what do we have to shoot this week? Okay, weed that area. Let's get it ready. Just don't shoot anything around.
And that's the interesting thing about television versus what we're doing right now. You and I can make stuff up here. It doesn't matter that it's the end of May when we're talking. We can pretend it's January. We can pretend it's September. Who knows, you know?
That's right.
But when you're shooting the darn thing, it's... You want the plants to look like they're supposed to look like at that time.
Exactly.
And that's always tricky.
Yeah. We did some pretty creative things when we started Melinda's Garden Moments, because we were shooting against the clock, so to speak. And so we created some gardens with the help of some local garden centers and and kind of made things work. We don't do that anymore because we shoot a year in advance. Because of exactly that, you know, the weather doesn't cooperate, and you're shooting to show May, and it does, you know, May may not look the same every year, but there are some years it's a lot more attractive than others.
Well, Melinda doesn't know this, but I've been recording for the last 5 minutes. Because I knew this.
Good thing I didn't say anything too bad, just confessing my horticultural sins, maybe.
You know what? But I think it's good that people know that things happen behind the scenes because folks who are in their own backyards have tragedies all the time. And the pros do too, you know, in trying to set up stuff for a shoot. Sometimes you got to borrow plants. Sometimes, like you say, you got to go someplace else to do it. It might not be the right time of year. You don't have the right the plant in the right part of its life during the growing season.
Right.
All these things happen, and believe it or not, Melinda and I have killed plants.
Exactly. But we know why, so that's why we're horticulturists.
Yeah.
Why we killed them or how.
I do, you know, I hadn't thought about that. But, yeah, I killed a few this spring, and I knew exactly what I had done immediately, and I started kicking myself, and I thought, well, at least I won't do that again.
Well, exactly. I have straw bale gardening is all the rage. You know, everybody, I get calls all the time, and I've confessed that I tried it 1 year, last year, wasn't successful, and I know what I did wrong, so I'm trying again this year. I was going to give it up, and I was never going to do it again, but I'm determined now to save my reputation, because everybody I see, oh, I love straw bale gardening, and it works great. And I'm like, well, here's what happened to me. I didn't condition. This is the, you know, day one you do this, day
yep.
two you do that. That is not my style of gardening.
It's so very specific. Yeah,
it's
that's why I haven't done it. I'll be honest with you. I want to just slam something in the ground and I'll come back and water it, but I don't want to do a lot with it.
Well, and everybody swears once it's in, it's really low maintenance. But I've got my little schedule. I got my straw bales this morning, so starting Monday, I'm going to do day one, two, and three, and this will probably be the last time I do straw bale gardening. But it's an area I want to revamp anyway, so I figure, okay, I've got a lot of quack grass, rocks, lousy soil, so I'm going to cover it with cardboard. I'm going to throw the bales of straw that didn't work last year as a mulch, and then I'm going to put my straw bales I'm gardening in on top of it. And so the worst case scenario is I'll be composting my plants instead of growing them, and then I can incorporate them in the soil and I'll be ready to plant in the ground in a year. So
why not? And it is interesting though, because I interviewed the guy who wrote the book on straw.
Joel Karsten?
Yeah, he was on my radio show, I believe, last year. And it is the flavor of the month. Everybody wants to garden in straw bales. And I think if you don't have real soil, that's a great thing.
Right.
If you do, you really don't need to do it. You might find it, you know, people say, well, it's like a raised bed. You don't have to bend over and you're going to have fewer weeds. And I go, okay, I get that. But I don't know. It's for particular situations is what I would think.
Exactly. And one of the things we did with the edible garden class for Great Courses is I wanted to show different ways. So we had raised beds. I did lasagna gardening, and I don't know if you've done that, and where you basically put newspaper or cardboard,
right.
Then you just, it's sheet composting, and
yep.
then you plant in it. And I have to say, it was the first time I'd done it because I finally had room. And I was planting right in this fresh lasagna garden, and then I aged one that I'm going to plant in this year, and the whole crew's like, it's not going to work, it's not going to work. And I said, well, that's part of why we're doing this. And I had great luck. It was wonderful. Now, it was a lot of work hauling yard waste and compost,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and so then I did one bed. I have sandy, rocky soil where I brought compost in and amended the soil, and I had great success in that garden too. And so I think you're absolutely right. You have to pick the strategy that fits not only the soil conditions and growing conditions, but your style of gardening. And
right.
I think that's sometimes what we forget when people fail at, and that's why I love to tell the story of my failed straw bale gardening is like, I didn't follow the guidelines. I pushed the limits, and it didn't work. And
that's because you think you can get away with anything, don't you, Missy?
I do, and I'm always reminded I can't. Nature is always in charge, in case we think otherwise.
It is, and I've already. Well, we're talking about garden failures with Melinda Myers here. Talk about a radio and interview failure. I started this interview by just wandering into a conversation without introducing my guest. So we're doing this backward. Smack in the middle of this, I'm going to introduce Melinda Myers. Melinda Myers, who's been on the show many times, who is an author, a lecturer, has done radio, television. Have you done film yet?
No. I don't think that's my future. I know it's not my future, unless it's carrying a plant across the back of the scene or something, maybe.
No stage work either.
No stage work. I leave that to you.
Okay, because I do stage work.
I know you do.
And also is a spokesperson for a great sponsor on my show, Milorganite. And that's one of the things that we have in common, because the Milorganite people have been very good to both of us. And
exactly.
We appreciate it. And it's a great product. And
it's goof-proof. We were talking about garden failures. Well, one way to avoid garden failures, or at least limit those, especially those of us that push the limits, is using a product like Milorganite, because it's goof-proof. It's low nitrogen, slow release. And so it does good things for your plants, but if you forget to close the spreader, or you accidentally, my problem this spring is, did I put that Milorganite in the container already, or did I add it? So I know that it won't hurt. I never recommend over-fertilizing, but it won't hurt if you have a moment like I did, did I fertilize or not? And so it's a great way to help increase your success.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that with a synthetic fertilizer, and
correct.
This is not a synthetic fertilizer. And so that leads us to conversations about Melinda, because she's, the thing we were talking about, her DVD set is from The Great Courses, and hers is called How to Grow Anything, Food Gardening for Everyone. And as I mentioned, it's a 12-disc DVD set. Melinda hosts it. Obviously, you shot some of it in D.C. You shot some of it in your place. And you can go to www.thegreatcourses.com. And once you're there, search for it. And I'm sure you'll be able to. And by the way, I have the link on my website. Go to this week's show, and that will be a real easy way. Go to mikenovak.net. And you can find it there if you don't want to search it that way. But that sounds like it was a real challenge for you to put that together.
It was. Great crew. Weather as a gardener last year, remember the cool, wet season, and tomatoes didn't do their best. Some crops did excellent. But what it was so good was I got to show the process from start to finish, which is always a challenge when you have a small space. I used to be a city gardener. You're going to someone else's house, and you can't. It's really hard to say, could you do this, this, and this in your yard for me so I can come to your house and shoot it? But we did run into a lot of weather challenges, because you know how it is. You did TV. It rains when you're going to do a live shoot.
Oh, boy.
Rains. Yeah. And luckily, I have sandy soil now, so at least if it pours down rain, unlike when I was dealing with clay, we could at least get back in the garden and do some work pretty quickly, as opposed to waiting a week for the soil to dry out. But it was very exciting and challenging. One of my favorite moments is we did a tree and shrub one, and you remember 19 below zero in January, several feet of snow. You guys had it worse than we did in the Chicago area. And the producer calls up and says, what have you shot today? And I went, it's really 19 degrees below zero here, and there's really 3 feet of snow. We've shot nothing today. And it was just one of those things of she was on a schedule. They were in D.C., and then they got hit. And then she didn't call anymore. But they were great people and a lot of fun. But it's just that whole, when you're not a gardener and you're not in tune with the weather and processes, it was just very funny.
Oh, speaking of 19 degrees below zero, and it really did happen, that was exactly the temperature we got down to in Chicago, which was not this past winter, but the one before.
Right.
And that very day, you'll love this. This is another garden fail story. I had a bunch of plants I was overwintering in my basement. And guess which door blew open? And I came home in 19 degree below zero weather, saw the door to the basement, which is not attached to the upstairs. You have to go outside, because I have a 125-year-old home. And you have to go outside to get into the basement, okay? The door was wide open. I had a 5-gallon bucket of water in there that I had saved from the fall because rain had gotten in. And I thought, okay, during the winter, I will go down occasionally every couple of weeks because the plants are practically dormant. And you give them a little water just to keep them going. Well, the 5-gallon bucket of water was frozen solid. All right. And so were all the plants. All those beautiful plants that I had overwintered in my basement. So that happens.
Wow, and who would have thought 19 below zero indoors an issue? Oh, my.
I know you wouldn't, but there you go. But you were talking about tomatoes and how last season, and you should know, folks, if you're listening to this, that Melinda operates out of Wisconsin. basically. And those of you listening to my show know I basically operate out of Chicago. And what I've learned from my Wisconsin friends is that I'm really surprised at how far behind Chicago you are, and you're only 90 miles north.
It is amazing. It truly is. You know, even hardiness, we're in the same hardiness zone,
mm-hmm.
but it's really different. And tomatoes, as you know, we want to wait for the air and the soil to be warm before we put those in the ground. And all the people at Jumpstart, I remember sitting on my front porch when it, middle of April, and it was that beautiful, it was like 75 degrees, and I kept saying, people are going to be buying tomatoes and trying to put them in the ground. And then the temperatures drop below freezing, as we can expect here,
yep.
you know, in the north and the Midwest. And so you're right. We really wait until the soil, the air and the soil warm. So Memorial Day may come early some years, but that doesn't mean the temperatures are going to follow. And I often wait until early June, or I have floating row covers around a lot of my pots and containers that are, you know, I can't easily move in the house. Because we've had those cold snaps in the last couple of weeks, and just covering things up in place because I kind of pushed the limit, and I'm like, I don't want to wait any longer to plant these, but I had to do some covering just because we had those frost threats.
Yeah, and Kathleen had a friend on Facebook write the other day, because we have this little portable greenhouse that I haven't used it in a dozen years, and I trotted it out this year, and we've got some plants in it, including tomatoes, and they are just so happy right now. And some guy on Facebook that she was writing to, was she was explaining to, said, oh, you know, my tomatoes are outside and it's 60 degrees and they don't care. Well, guess what, dude? They do care. They actually do care. And it doesn't make them happy to have to overcome cooler temperatures. And you're talking 60 degrees during the day. What happens at night when it's 45 degrees?
Exactly. And last year, I saw a lot of tomatoes with brown spots and damage, and it was the cool temperatures. Like you said, the nights were in the 40s in June. And not only does it cause some physical damage, but it also slows down. So things aren't going to ripe, but you're not going to get that first crop of red tomatoes in your block. It's the guy that waited 2 weeks later to plant when the temperatures at night were in the 60s, not during the day and lower at night. And so you really it pays off to wait, or to have that extra protection, whether it's a mini greenhouse like you have, floating row covers, cloches, you know, give them a break early in the season. It'll pay off with an earlier harvest and a healthier plant.
I always tell folks, don't even think about it before June 1st. And you mentioned that sometimes Memorial Day comes early. It is this year.
Exactly.
The official holiday is the 25th of this year. And I'm looking at the calendar. So now today's, what, the 28th or something like that.
Right.
I'm not even paying attention. But in Chicago, it's supposed to get down into the 60s again in the next couple of days. Not tomorrow, but the day after. And so if you said, okay, it's Memorial Day, time to put out the tomatoes, and you're not paying attention to the weather, you're going to pay the price.
Oh, you bet. When I was working for the City of Milwaukee Forestry, of course, the first year I'm there and working with the boulevards, there was a terrible winter. We lost half the perennials we ordered, all died with the growers. And then we had a frost on June 9th. This is the City of Milwaukee, you know, and we'd had the coleus out, and luckily we had enough urban heat. You know, the urban heat island,
right.
One good thing about it, protected a lot of ours, but we had some backups in the greenhouse we had to put to work because June 9th we had a frost.
Yikes.
Yeah, exactly. That's later than normal, obviously,
yeah.
But still, you're right. Those cool temperatures, the plants take a beat.
That's your punishment for living in Milwaukee, you
I
know.
I think it was. I thought, boy, they're going to fire me just because, let's see, half the perennials died, the annuals got nipped by frost. What else can go wrong?
Well, because we've been dilly-dallying here and just chatting about nothing in particular, it's kind of like the Seinfeld show here with you and me talking gardening. But let's give folks some real – let's sort of quickly – Heat, obviously, important for tomatoes. At least, don't leave them to their own devices when it's too cool outside. What else do you tell folks about growing tomatoes?
One of the things, if you've got a long leggy tomato and it is not grafted, because the new grafted tomatoes, you keep the graft above ground. But
right.
The other tomatoes, I'm a big fan of trenching. I usually dig a trench about 3 or 4 inches deep, remove the lower leaves, carefully bend my tomato upright, so I get all those extra roots along the stem. Now, I have to admit, I have cracked the stem in the process.
Sure.
I buried it anyway, and it recovered, you know. So never give up. It may not always work, but it did.
I've done that in the past, and I just want to make sure, because this is audio and we don't have the visual with it. You dig a trench and you lie the tomato on its side, and then at the very tip top, the first couple of branches, you sort of bend it up. So that's the thing sticking above the ground, and then you bury the rest. And the tomato is unusual in
right.
that it's one of the few plants where if you bury the stem, it will sprout roots along the nodes.
Exactly, and so it's great, and it will have a bigger root system, be more drought tolerant. You'll reduce the problem with blossom end rot because you have more roots to absorb moisture and nutrients evenly. I'm a fan of towering tomatoes. Get them up off the ground. You'll have a decent crop, not as big as if you let it sprout on the ground, but you lose less to insect disease and gardener's feet, I call it. You don't step on the fruit, and you keep it up, so you have fewer disease problems. So a little bit smaller harvest, but it's a good harvest. My dad staked his tomatoes. I honestly, it's kind of like straw bale gardening. You know, you have to keep after it.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you're not a tomato staker.
No. I like the idea. I don't think I've ever done it properly. I find that no matter what I've done to try to stake tomatoes, they always get away from me. I'm not sure why that is.
You have to be out there diligent. I think my father just wanted to get away from my brother and I, so he went and staked his tomatoes every night. But you basically train one or two stems up on that stake. Remove the suckers, these are the stems that form between the leaf and the main stem, so that you don't have this wild big plant. You'll have fewer tomatoes, but earlier tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So you may want to do like an early girl or 4th of July and stake it, and maybe only do one, but that way you'll have an earlier, you know, some of those good red ripe tomatoes, maybe the first ones on the block, and while you're waiting for your towered tomatoes to come in. And then mulching. I'm a huge fan. Shredded leaves. You know, when I lived in the city, I always had leaves blowing in my yard. You know, I don't know where they came from, but shredded leaves, evergreen yield, any organic matter to help keep the soil consistent
right.
and moist.
Yeah, and that's part of the deal, too. You mentioned blossom end rot earlier, and for folks who are wondering what that is, because tomatoes can have a few problems, and
right.
blossom end rot is when you look at your tomato, and right on the bottom of it, it's got a dark spot, and that happens. It's a calcium deficiency, but it has to do with watering and watering consistently. And I tell that to people, and their eyes glaze over. How do you describe watering consistently, Melinda Myers?
You know, water thoroughly, a good soaking, and then when you feel the top few inches of soil, and they're about the consistency of a damp sponge, you know, then you want to water thoroughly again. But mulching really extends the time between watering. It allows you a little bit of forgiveness. So, you know, if you're a day late in watering, the plant's not going to suffer. And the other thing with blossom end rot, it's usually just the first set of fruit. Now, granted, we've waited all year for those, but it's the plant usually then corrects itself and really is able to overcome that. But, right, consistent moisture is important. And I forgot one of the big ingredients is proper soil preparation, which
mm-hmm.
includes Milorganite, which is low nitrogen and slow release. So every time it rains or you water, you're releasing some nutrients. And I found if my soil's in good shape, I fertilize in the spring, and often that's enough. If my plants need a boost, when your tomatoes have fruit about the size of a golf ball, that's about the time that your tomatoes, if they need a boost, a second time to fertilize those. But if you put some effort in your soil, you know, a good shot of Milorganite in the spring, and then only if needed in mid-season. And, you know, you don't have to do every 2 weeks mixing and pouring and watering in the fertilizer. It's a lot easier.
Let me ask you a question. And by the way, we're talking to Melinda Myers, and you can find more information about her at melindamyers.com. And that's M-Y-E-R-S. So you don't get confused with the spelling. I did get that right, didn't I? Because I did
I did
that from memory. I don't even have the cheat sheet in front of me.
I'm impressed.
I've known you too long. That's the problem.
I think so.
What are you, in terms of container gardening, and that's a separate thing from gardening in your yard, because in a container it's a separate ecosystem, not even an ecosystem. It's, you know, it's a pot with usually soilless mix in it and some plants, which they're going to need some fertilization, and they don't have, there's not a lot of biology in there. Do you use Milorganite for your container gardens?
Oh, I do, for not only my edibles, but all of my ornamentals, and that's really all I use, and I have really good success. It does have a small percent of phosphorus that's available to plants. They also have found that, you know, if there is any potassium in there, which is good for hardiness and disease resistance, if there's any in that organic matter or potting mix, it will help release it and make it plant available. But I've had really good success. The other thing I like to do with containers, especially when I'm growing a big tomato, is the larger your container, the longer it holds the nutrients and the moisture. So, you know, you can fertilize that. There's a lot of potting mix there. And when you water thoroughly, you've got more potting mix to hold the moisture than if you put it in a 6-inch pot, where I've seen people grow compact tomatoes in pretty tiny containers. And yeah, you can fertilize a lot, and you can water a lot, and you can keep them alive, but boy, you're making yourself work really hard to get mediocre results. So, you know, a 3-gallon size container, an old 5-gallon bucket, drill some holes in the bottom if it was an old food container, fill it with potting mix. It's a great way to really reduce the cost. I was interviewed by a reporter about growing a tomato, and I kept saying, you can do it really cheap. You know, you can go and get a recycled pot from a garden center. You can recycle a 5-gallon bucket. Well, he came up with $56 for a tomato, and I'm like, really? You know, what are you buying, the high-end, you know, pot, and you're buying a trowel, a high-end trowel, which you could really just use your hand for soilless mix. So you can spend as much or as little as you want, but a bigger container and a healthy plant and some Milorganite and then proper watering will give you excellent results.
There's a book out there called The $64 Tomato.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
Now that you mentioned it, I did. I think he must have been doing his research there.
Maybe. William Alexander wrote that, and it's one of those books that's on my shelf, and I'm going to get to one of these days because it sounds like it's very funny and entertaining. And that's, you know, one way that goes is that I like your idea that you can do it on the cheap, and that's what people want. They want to be able to garden on the cheap. But so do you figure that is what's the smallest size container that you think can grow a decent tomato?
You know, I've done it in as little as a 15-inch diameter, which is probably between 2 and 3 gallons worth of potting mix. You know, pepper you could do easily in a 2-gallon mix. A tomato 3-gallon size, that's like an 18-inch size pot. You know, think of 3 gallons of milk. Would that fill up that container? That's one way to look at it. And a lot of times I'll go to a nursery, to the garden center in the recycling bin, and find an old shrub pot or tree pot, and that's a perfect size, and it's black. So what's nice about that is you can kind of put it behind your decorative containers, and so it blends in, and so you spend your money on a nice pot with flowers, and then your edibles are beautiful and attractive, but maybe you don't want to spend the money on a pretty pot for that, so you put them towards the back.
Sure.
In the sun.
Yeah.
And cover it up.
And it absorbs heat, the black.
Exactly. And which obviously we need here.
Yes, in Milwaukee. We need it in Chicago sometimes, too. I mean, we're still not quite there. We're talking to Melinda Myers. Again, melindamyers.com. I've got more questions for you. So hang on, Melinda,
okay. And
we'll come right back. This is the Mike Novak Show.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
You can have a beautiful landscape and be kind to the environment, as Melinda and I have been discussing. For great growing results, I suggest you try Milorganite Organic Nitrogen Fertilizer. And here's one of the reasons. Milorganite is very low in salts. Unlike synthetic fertilizers, Milorganite's nitrogen will not burn your plants and can be applied anytime during the growing season. And because the nutrients are released as the plant needs it, they are less likely to leach into waterways, which is better for the environment. As Melinda says, it's goof-proof. Milorganite for better results, naturally. Visit Milorganite.com to find a garden center near you.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakenings, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakenings features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Back with Melinda Myers, I realized as we were talking in the first part of the show, Melinda, that I was just having too good a time.
We always do, though. I do too when we chat.
And I know that when we've done it in the past, when I was on Progresso Radio, as I like to call it now, we never had enough time.
No, we never did.
And we would get into these conversations, and because you know so much and I have so many questions, I thought, you know what, let's just continue. Let's just move on. I want to let folks know of a couple of websites. I mentioned already Melinda Myers' website, which is melindamyers.com, M-Y-E-R-S. And I assume that, you had the... Last year when I interviewed you, you had just come out with 4 books, which makes me crazy. But how are those doing?
They're doing great. The Midwest book has been fun. This year I traveled quite a bit throughout the Midwest, and so that's been very fun. It's a way of, I always take care of our zone, of course, but I grew up in Ohio and get to travel around. So there are a few plants in my Midwest book that we can only drool over, but most of them are plants that will do well here. And what I love about books, and I don't know if you found this, is for me the writing is not as fun as the going out and meeting the gardeners when you're taking your book out and doing a talk and doing book signings and getting a chance to share, you know, hear from gardeners what they're doing, what fun things they've learned. Because gardeners like to share ideas and plants and not only ask questions, but I always leave with a few new tips that I can pass on.
And the book that I highly recommend to people is Midwest Gardener's Handbook, which is one of those books that came out last year. And the others are for specific states, but the Midwest sort of covers everything, doesn't it?
It does. And so I was lucky enough to be able to do a little intro about, you know, let's say the chapter in annuals, kind of some basics on using annuals in the landscape, and then profiled some plants. And then at the end of the annual chapter, talk about just some key things to do throughout the year. So it was a little bit of how to and when to, and just to give you a spattering of things to, you know, whether you're a beginner gardener or you've been gardening a long time, people tell me, oh, there's things in there I didn't know and I've been gardening a long time, or, oh, I know I need to do that, but I always forget. So this is a good reminder.
Yeah, and again, if you go to her website, there's so much there. You do various tips. You do videos. You do a little bit of everything, and You cover it all in the gardening realm. So pretty much anything you're looking for will be at melindamyers.com. I wanted to get to, though, you and I have had interesting conversations in the past about lawns.
Yes.
And I think I'm getting cranky in my old age because I'm starting less and less to care about people who want the perfect lawn. I just don't, because their idea of the perfect lawn is something that's not in nature, because nature is full of biodiversity. Different things grow in different places. Seeds are always looking for a place to germinate. And the idea that we can manipulate everything and control everything, I think, is destined to make you unhappy if you're a gardener or even a landscaper. It's, you know, just somebody who wants... is trying to create the perfect outdoors. Well, that's not going to happen. And I think folks need to relax a little bit, don't you?
Oh, I agree. And I think that's in the gardening world, too. I mean, I think, you know, when I look at my lawn, my goal is to have some natural meadows and things over time and convert. But I really have a combination, a lot of clover, which is good. It's my source of nitrogen along with Milorganite. I've got some grass. But if I went out and killed the weeds, I'd have a lot of mud, and I'm okay. I'm with you. I see birds. I have birds and butterflies and bees in my yard. And so for me, I'll put up with some dandelions, and I'll put up with some of the things that may be annoying to others. And luckily, my neighbors, aren't concerned about that, so I'm not living in the city anymore. But I always had that philosophy that I'd dig and keep things under control enough to keep my neighbors happy, so I wasn't creating a problem. But a perfect lawn for me keeps your feet from getting muddy. It feeds the birds.
Yeah.
It's got clover, you know.
Yeah.
It's a place my grandkids can run around on, you know, and I don't care if they, you know, wear a path in it to the playset. That's fine. So, and I'm happy, you know, when I see people that are so trying to kill ground ivy.
Otherwise known as Creeping Charlie.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We've
got to call it by its right name because that's
yes,
how... I'm sorry.
And I always tell people, you know, it's a beautiful ground cover. It's fragrant when you walk on it.
Yeah.
It's flowers in the spring. It grows in the sun and the shade. And they go, I don't care. I want to kill it. You know, and I'm thinking, well, I can help you with that. But you know what? If you embrace it...
It's a lot easier.
Sure.
That's my point. That's my point, Melinda. I've gone and I've done garden talks and said the words Creeping Charlie and had people hiss. All right. And I look at them and I say, folks, it's not a moral judgment. This is not an evil plant. This is just a plant that's trying to grow somewhere. All right. And has found the conditions right in your yard. Maybe that's your problem, is that you're not paying attention to your soil, or more likely, this Creeping Charlie has been growing in your yard for 5 years, and you kind of looked the other way, and now you come to me and you say, I want it gone. And I know what the understated or unstated part of that question is. You want it gone by next week. Well, I'm not going to play that game with you, okay, because I can't win that game. And I don't think it's necessary. And I guess that's the point I'm making, is that it's not necessary to get rid of every dandelion. And clover, I don't even consider a weed, as you don't, because it's supplying nitrogen for free
exactly.
In your soil. Creeping Charlie, as you said, as I always tell people, I say, look at the blooms. It's a little orchid-like purple bloom, and it's a fragrant plant, and it's got scalloped leaves with little bronzed edges. How could you not like this plant?
You know, and you brought up a very good point. If you've got weeds and your lawn is struggling, there's something that's more conducive to growing those weeds than your lawn grass, and fix that problem. So, you know, if your soil's compacted, aerate it, you know.
Bingo.
Don't spray weeds because they're going to come back. You know, I love when people go, well, can I kill moss? Yeah, but if you don't fix the cause, improve the drainage, increase light, it's going to come back. Maybe call it a moss garden. I always say people are paying money for
yes,
that.
Yes, yes. That's the other thing I say. Why don't you sell it if you've got so much moss? Now, if you're in the Pacific Northwest, yeah, I can understand, because moss is a huge problem. It grows on your roof. It grows
right.
Everywhere. In the Midwest, people pay money to
yes.
Get moss and put it in their yards.
Yes. And so we did a video. I did a video for Milorganite. It's on their YouTube channel and mine on we called it eco-friendly lawn control. I wanted to call it weeds as indicator plants, but only you and I would get that. But it's really about proper care, and if you do have this weed and you don't like it, then fix the cause, because that's the really way to not have a perfect lawn, but you know, keep your feet from getting muddy when it rains and keep your neighbors happy to some extent. So, you know, and then achieving it in a more a kind of holistic approach as opposed to just getting out the spray, because you're going to have to get out the spray twice a year, every year, and you'll never get ahead if you don't fix the cause.
Yeah, and as I say, weeds are just messengers. In fact, there's a what you should have called your piece was, "Don't shoot me, I'm only the messenger."
You are absolutely right.
And they're messengers. They're telling you something about your soil. So if you got clover, you probably got a nitrogen deficiency. If you got creeping Charlie, it's not draining well or it's compacted. If you got dandelions, it's probably related to calcium, and on and on and on. And so they're just telling you something about your soil. So if you're really, really interested in that perfect lawn, and I'm using air quotes, and I really don't like saying it anyway, then do the things that Melinda said. Core aerate, water properly, mow higher, overseed. People think they have this idea that, well, it's lawn, so if I rip out a part of it, it'll fill in. No, it won't.
The weeds will beat it.
Yes, they will. They will be there first. You know, I don't know what it is about folks who think that lawns just automatically fill in.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things, too, is fertilization. And not just because I work with Milorganite, but universities have found, and I think it was the University of Wisconsin, that one fertilization, just one, can help reduce your weeds greatly. I had a friend call, and she wanted to hire a lawn service. And I'm like, why do you want to hire a lawn service? Well, I have dandelions. I said, everybody has dandelions this year. It's been a great year. I said, do you fertilize your lawn? Well, no. I said, why don't you start there? Fertilize your lawn. I said, you like the birds and the butterflies and the bees, so why don't you start with fertilization?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and then at the end of this year, then let's talk about what you need to do, if anything. Because, you know what, beef up your lawn, then the weed population is smaller, and you'll be able to tolerate it.
Yeah, the idea is let your lawn outcompete your weeds.
Right.
And one of the ways you do that, as you say, is make it stronger, fertilize it once a year. And I'm a big proponent of less is more in that regard. I mean, I love the idea that you can use an organic product like Milorganite. And by the way, go to Milorganite.com, Milorgite. Did I spell it right? Milorganite.
Gannite.
See, I can't even spell. Milorganite.
O-R-G-A-N-I-T, Milwaukee Organic Nitrogen is where that name came from. They had a contest, so I don't know if that'll help with spelling or not. But
maybe it will. But the idea that you use an organic product, and don't do it too often. I got to tell you, I'm not a fan of the four-step programs.
Me neither.
I think it's overkill, and killing is the right word there. Okay, Melinda Myers, before we wrap up with you, let's talk a little bit about containers, because folks, everybody wants to grow containers. We did touch on that earlier, and I've had people, you know, when I talk to people about fertilizing their yards, I'm not a fan of the blue stuff either. See, I told you I was cranky in my old age. I don't like the blue stuff, and they go, well, can we use it in containers? And I'm like, sure, it's an isolated thing, but as you pointed out earlier, why not put Milorganite in there?
I think I've confessed, I call myself a low input, not a lazy gardener, but I think we all have a lot of things we want to do. I grow a lot of containers, even though I now have a large piece of property, because I like to bring the black and blue salvia right next to my living room window so I can watch the hummingbirds, and I like to have some herbs right outside my kitchen door so I can go grab them if I need to spruce something up in the kitchen. And so for me, there's never enough time, and I think I'm not alone. I think most of us are busy, and we want to do a lot of gardening, and when we go to the garden center in the spring, we're excited, and then we come home, and we have so many things to do. So anything I can do to make it easy. I always use containers with drainage holes. Even if you could water perfect, nature will remind you it's in charge. Mm-hmm. I like to incorporate Milorganite in with my potting mix or just sprinkle it on top. It works either way. And that way, every time I water, I'm fertilizing. If the weather gets hot and I forget to water a day, I won't burn the roots. And depending on how many plants I packed in and how hot it is, I may be able to get through the whole season, or I may need to do a mid-season fertilization. But that's two fertilizations versus every 2 weeks. And it promotes slow, steady growth, and that means it's less hungry. You know, it's more sturdy growth. It doesn't need as much water. The more we fertilize, the more lush, succulent growth, the more nutrients it needs, the more water it needs, the more susceptible to insect and disease problems, too. And so a low, steady diet, grazing, just like we're supposed to do, is better for our plants.
You know, I found a tip, though. I don't know if this... Sometimes you experiment with things. First of all, I got to tell you something really funny. And I've decided that peace lilies. They're indoor hostas, basically.
Right.
Have you ever thought of that?
I never did, but boy, they are thirsty plants. So,
they are thirsty plants, and they also look like hostas.
They do.
So if you want an indoor hosta, you know, and a lot of people like their hostas, they're not native, but they're fairly benign unless you just plant your whole yard with them. And some people do, and I don't understand that either. And I was talking to a horticulturist friend of mine recently, because I've been embarrassed at garden talks because folks come up to me and they say, well, what do you do about slugs on your hostas? And I have never had slug problems on my hostas. And I didn't understand why until a friend of mine, a horticultural friend of mine, recently said, how many hostas do you have in your yard? And I said, I don't know, half a dozen. He said, that's it. It's like these people have too many hostas in their yard. So they're always fighting off slugs. And he's right, because I really don't put that. I have a few in a few spots, and they're fun and, you know, benign, as I said. But what I discovered about peace lily, as you said, it's a very thirsty plant. So I decided to try an experiment. I figured, what the heck? I had like two or three peace lilies, and I figured if I kill one, so what? I put it in, I violated the cardinal rule of indoor gardening. Can you guess what it was?
You set it in water.
No, but close. Put it in a pot without drain holes. And I thought, okay. It likes water, and sometimes my problem is I don't water it enough, and then it starts to droop, and you got to, you know, it'll tell you, a peace lily will tell you when it's unhappy. And so I did it in a pot without drain holes, because I had this beautiful glazed pot, and I didn't want to fuss with drilling a hole in it. And it worked beautifully. I mean, that peace lily bloomed, and it's been so happy in there, And part of it is I'm paying attention. I don't water it every week. I keep an eye on it, but I think it likes it. But the problem is I couldn't. It would be hard to tell people to do that, because they'd kill it with kindness. They'd overwater it.
Exactly. And peace lilies, I'm pretty sure I saw these growing in South Africa in streams, which is a little different than a soggy, boggy condition. But they do like it moist. And so you came to the secret for people who are into benign neglect, those of us that water barely enough to keep things alive. And for peace lilies, then we're not going to overwater. That is a good strategy. So if you love to water and you tend to overwater, don't take his advice. But if you're like me, I might try another peace lily now.
Yeah, I mean, I put it, it doesn't drain, and I realize, well, I don't have to worry about the water leaving, and the only way I'm going to kill it is if I water it too much, and that's not going to happen.
There's the solution. I love it.
So, all right, well, Melinda Myers, it's been great having you on for a long time to talk. And again, let me let folks know that her website is Melinda Myers, spelled MYERS.com. As I said, a ton of stuff, her books, her videos, her ice cream is on there. You make ice cream, right? It's made out of prickly pear cactus, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Oh, boy, now I'm going to have to start making some ice cream.
Exactly. People are going to start calling you and go, where can I get some of that prickly pear cactus ice cream? Nah, she doesn't do that yet, but that's coming up next. I mean, she's got – I mean, Melinda has peeps, okay?
I'm very lucky, and that's why I can do a lot. I have a great team that works with me
peeps.
That keeps me honest and moving forward.
And I am jealous, and someday I'm going to – I have Kathleen, who is my peep here, and she works really, really hard, and that's part of the problem. I have to get somebody else on the team. And we will talk again real soon.
That sounds great, Mike. Always a pleasure. You take care, and happy gardening.
Happy gardening to you.
Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app. The sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
If you have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, you will probably recognize the name Melinda Myers. Yes, not only was she my guest on today's show, but she is the author of one of the regional reports for the Chicago area that are in every issue of the magazine. Melinda covers southern Wisconsin, and there are also reports for Rockford, southwestern Michigan, northwestern Indiana, the far west suburbs, and the south suburbs. So, no matter where you live in Chicagoland, that's in the name of the magazine, get it? You'll find helpful information about creating a beautiful yard, not to mention events that are happening in your neck of the woods. Then there's my column on the inside back page of each issue. It's the same for each of those regions. So don't go expecting any kind of fancy treatment just because you live in Elburn. Sorry, it's been a long week. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, a publication of state-by-state gardening magazines. Go to chicagolandgardening.com. But if you're in other parts of the Midwest or the South, try one of the 21 magazines in those regions by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600. That's it for me today, except for maybe apology to the people of Elburn. Otherwise, go green or go home. You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net for links, photos, and commentary.